The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS EM
890. Welcome into White Sox Weekly for the week of August 20th. I'm Connor McKnight. We have plenty to do for you on this afternoon, talking White Sox as they get set to play the A's in game two of a three-game set. All of the information pertaining to this matchup has just been handed to me, and we'll get it all to you over the course of the next 2 hours. Lots to do, including a couple of interviews that I scrambled around and got through in the last, 2 hours or so. Cool interview with Justin Morneau. Sat down with the White Sox DH and hopefully soon first baseman. That's a little teaser as to what we talked about. And had a really interesting conversation with the guy. I hadn't had a chance to talk with Justin all that much. The White Sox have been on the road so much since he'd been added to the roster that it had been tough to catch up. Finally got a chance to sit down with him. It is a great conversation, and you'll hear that on a little bit later on in the show. Talked with a couple other members of the White Sox coaching staff and the roster, too, about the big report that Bob Nightingale, USA Today, had out there about the potential changes to the game that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, is pondering. And I want to put this in the right perspective, and maybe we'll get to it. Oh, we will get to it for sure a little bit later in the show. But these aren't changes that are set in stone or going to happen. These are just a couple of ideas that he's kind of kicking around and kind of looking for a little bit of feedback on, and the right way to go about implementing them, I suppose, probably the best way to put it. We'll talk about those quite a bit during the course of the afternoon. And as always, want your feedback on the topics at hand. Those aren't the only ones that we'll be getting to throughout the course of the afternoon. There are a couple more. We'll talk some about Carlos Rodon and his last handful of starts. I was pretty impressed by the first two. Well, I guess the middle two of the four coming out of the All-Star, his rehab start, I guess, in Triple-A Charlotte. And this last one was particularly impressive, and in a different way. You know, maybe the results weren't exactly what you'd seen from Carlos before, but I thought the way he went about getting his getting successful outing done was pretty cool. Tim Anderson's development continues. He seems to be tweaking a couple of things. In fact, Justin Morneau brought up a couple of things about Tim in the interview with him. You'll hear it there, but I think Tim's changing a little bit. We've got a bullpen that is developing some too. Roles are being handed to pitchers that may not have had them just a couple of weeks ago, and we'll talk with a guy like Jacob Turner about what his new role looks like, and again, the changes that are being talked about potentially in this game. Also want to talk a little bit about Carson Fulmer and his reassignment to Triple-A Charlotte. Going to head down there and throw out of the rotation some news and notes, though, before we really kick things off. Of course, we're taking you up to the pregame show. That starts at 5:35 tonight as the White Sox take on the A's. Chris Sale and Ross Detweiler are the starters tonight. It was a rough go last night as James Shields was hit around quite a bit by the Oakland A's. 9-0 the final as Kendall Graveman might have thrown the game of his life. Hopefully the White Sox with Sale and Quintana today and tomorrow are able to put things on the left side of the win-loss column and take advantage of an Oakland team that's a little bit depleted since the trade deadline and doesn't quite have, although you wouldn't know it by looking at last night's result, doesn't quite have the offense that it had earlier in the season. So hopefully you got two favorable matchups for the White Sox this weekend. Avisail Garcia is headed out to a rehab assignment with the Charlotte Knights. He's going to be in the lineup for the Knights tonight. Saw Avi taking a little BP yesterday. It was hot and humid. Not necessarily sticky, but definitely one of those days where the wind's seemingly blowing out here at U.S. Cellular Field. Although, you know, with the swirling, you can never really tell which way the wind's blowing looking at the flags on top of the flagpoles. But Avi parked a couple, looked good, looked healthy, looked like he was moving around fairly well. So Avi's headed to AAA Charlotte for some rehab work. His DL stint, by the way, retroactive to August 7th. So you do the math there, 15 days, it looks like just a couple. And he could be back with the big league club. He had been hitting fairly well before his injury, before kind of twisting his knee, spraining some things in there, and having to go on to the disabled list in the first place. So hopefully Avi's hearty and healthy, or hearty, if you want to make up a completely new word and embarrass yourself in front of everyone, you can do that too. We'll get things started this way and kick things off with a conversation that I kind of want to have about the White Sox as it regards some of the moves that have been made on this roster of late. I want to talk about Carson Fulmer to lead things off here. And the reason I want to start here is because I think, you know, adjusting your sights throughout the course of a season happens for every ball club, no matter whether they're, you know, streaking through 10 straight wins or whether they're getting buried at the bottom of the standings. Like, I don't know, even a seasons like the Braves or the Twins happen to be having, the sights get adjusted some throughout the course of the year. And that can be on a macro level or it can be on a micro level. It can be as wide as, you know, your offensive production throughout the course of a couple weeks, or it can be as granular as the particular assignments that guys out of the bullpen are getting and as they change from day to day. And I think Carson kind of exemplifies where the White Sox, how the White Sox focus, how their targets have changed some throughout the course of this season. And I think where we start with Carson is why he was added to the big league roster in the first place and where the sights were then. I think, you know, you'll remember pretty clearly that when Carson was called up, he was called up from Double A. And a little shocking, I thought. I thought he would definitely work through AAA for a little bit. I thought that while it was definitely possible that he'd get work out of the bullpen at the major league level, it's something the White Sox have done with a lot of their top pitching prospects throughout the last handful of years, going all the way back to Mark Burley, working all the way forward to Carlos Rodon, Chris Sale, too. It's not something that's been kind of a foreign concept for some of the White Sox top starters as prospects, as guys coming up through the system. But for Fulmer, there was seemingly at the time a need out of the bullpen too. It wasn't just, and you could argue that it's been this way with pitchers before, but specifically for Carson, there was a need out of the bullpen, and he was called up to see if possibly he could fit that need. Performances for, well, I guess we should talk about the need first. The need was obviously a guy to kind of grab some of those medium leverage situations. Robertson and Jones and Duke at the time had handled those higher leverage kind of situations for the White Sox. But as the bullpen had faltered some, because the starters weren't getting exactly deep into ball games, had played a lot of close ones, the usage was up, they were looking for another arm to be a little electric out of that bullpen and maybe be able to provide some bridge before Robin had to go to Duke or Jones, and then subsequently Robertson for any kind of save situation. So that opportunity was there, and it was also kind of a learning experience. It was also definitely a learning experience for Carson Fulmer. So that opportunity was given. It was handed out somewhat aggressively, though I don't think egregiously so. I think, you know, really when you look back at this thing, and for a couple of different reasons, this was a season that can turn out just fine for Carson Fulmer. And a lot of it might have to do with the next, you know, 6-7 weeks or so, and whether or not he meets with some success and learns a couple of things down in AAA. And really, when we talk about AAA at this point, it's about starting. It's about figuring out, you know, what he needs to do to be successful, batter to batter, start to start, and then bringing those lessons, coupled with the lessons he learned here at the big league level about facing, you know, the best in the world, the best hitters in the business, and merging those all together to hopefully make a successful start for the White Sox here still in 2016. Hopefully that comes, you know, this September, and hopefully that comes with something, you know, with something there for him, you know, with a little bit of chance to make it more than just the one. But potentially, That's exactly where this season for Carson could go. We'll get to more about Carson Fulmer when we get back here. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We've got a conversation with Justin Morneau in a little while, talking about some of the rule changes with Robin Ventura, with Jacob Turner, too. I wanted to talk about a couple of the different things that have been posited by the commissioner in the last week or so, and we'll continue our conversation on Carson Fulmer. You're more than welcome to get in on any of these topics. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You can tweet at us as well. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. That's at C1 McKnight. That's how you get to us on Twitter. We'll pause it here real quickly for a quick commercial break. We come back, continue our conversation here on White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890.
Jonathan Brandmeier, weekday mornings 9 till 11
on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, talking a little White Sox here this afternoon. You can live out your dream of becoming a professional baseball player by attending the White Sox-Dodgers Fantasy Camp. That's January 15th through the 21st at the spring training home of the White Sox and Dodgers, Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. For more info, this is pretty cool. I know a couple people who have done this and have had an absolute blast. For more info, call the Fantasy Camp hotline at 623-302-5078. I'll give you that number again. This is for the Sox-Dodgers Fantasy Camp. It's January 15th through the 21st. 623-302-5078. If you're more an online person, you can sign up by going to whitesox.com and clicking on Fantasy Camp. It's right there on the front page of the website for you. Be a really awesome time. Also, wouldn't be a terrible idea to get out of Chicago for a couple of days in the middle of January. Probably not a terrible place to take a little vacation, play a little baseball, and get it done. Speaking of just a little bit of vacation, there's another thing the White Sox are up to. This Monday is the Field of Greens Celebrity Charity Golf Tournament, and it's presented by Miller Lite. It's going to be a fun day. I am going to be involved in it. I will be golfing with some unfortunate souls out there at the course at Harborside. It's 11001 South Doty Avenue East on the south side. It is a 10:15 shotgun start, and you can still sign up to go golf. I believe there are still opportunities for you to get out there Monday morning and golf with us. All you have to do is contact Sarah Martin at 312-674-5391. That's 312-674-5391. Or email her at smartin, M-A-R-T-E-N, at shysox.com. Should be a fun day of golf. If nothing else, you will watch me embarrass myself every time I try and swing at one of those little tiny golf balls. I'll get it off the tee. I just don't know which way it's, well, I do know which way it's going. It's going harshly to the right. It is going to slice immediately right and into as many trees as I can possibly find. So if you're in for a day of watching that or hanging out with your friends and some other White Sox, some actual White Sox celebrities come out there to the Field of Greens charity golf tournament, that's Monday. It's coming up this Monday, but you can still get yourself involved. Had been talking about a couple of things, about teams changing their sights or moving the bar, I guess, is another way to put it, throughout the course of a season. And I think it's a good thing to do. I think, as a fan base heading into a season, you come in with, expectations of X, Y, and Z. Maybe you're a team that expects to win a pennant, that expects to play in a World Series. There are a handful of ball clubs like that, maybe every season. Maybe you're a team that's looking to give opportunities to a bunch of young players. You're looking to find out which kids can play. Maybe you're a team that's, somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, has a couple of pieces that can make a good run at things here, or, is a team that wants to add a couple of pieces at some point throughout the course of the season to make that kind of a run. Regardless of where you're at, expectations throughout the long course of a major league season tend to shift. then I think that's okay. I think specifically in cases when you raise the bar some for teams that have overachieved a little bit, you know, maybe you do press that gas pedal some on things like acquisitions, on things like the promotion of some top prospects, depending on who they are. And that's kind of what got us to a conversation about Carson Fulmer. We hadn't had a chance to talk here on White Sox Weekly about Carson Fulmer since he'd been sent down to AAA Charlotte. And I just wanted to kind of address the topic a little bit, give you my thoughts on it. Feel free to hop in, 312-591-8900, or you can tweet at us at C1McKnight is the Twitter handle. I think that with the send down of Carson Fulmer to AAA, I think it was a good idea to get him up here and face major league hitters. And I think I can say that for a couple of different reasons. Having talked to the guy and seeing him kind of react to being out there and succeeding and react to seeing out there him going out there and failing too, I was kind of impressed by the way he handled both of those things. He was jacked as anybody could be about a first outing against the Angels in which he struck out Albert Pujols in his first at bat. You know what I mean? That's why wouldn't you be jacked about that? And he absolutely was. But there were outings where, you know, wildness jumped up and attacked him. He wasn't able to hit the strike zone as often as obviously you would have liked. He was wild at points where he wasn't able to hit the catcher's glove a couple of times, too. So those are and were the issues that Carson Fulmer was always going to have to work on, that he was always going to have to conquer, at least, you know, at this point in his career, to be a successful pitcher, forget at the major league level, at any level. And he's been, you know, kind of up and down with that command issue in starts in AA, in starts, relief appearances in the major league level, and in his first start at AAA, it didn't go all that great. Thing is, I kind of sense, or at least have seen, that he's a kid who's ready and willing to learn the lessons. And that's, to me, step number one, right? I mean, it'd be one thing if you were a guy that was just going out there and doing exactly what you'd done your entire career and not changing it, given the results that popped up. Carson's not that guy. So at least, if it makes you feel any different about where the Sox were at, where Carson was at throughout the course of this year, at least you know that, or hopefully you can trust me on that one. I think, too, that, and I remember reading an article, and I wish I looked for it online and couldn't quite locate it before showtime today. But I remember reading an article, it might have been Jay Jaffe, who now writes for SI.com, and I don't think he was writing for SI at the time he wrote this, but either way, hopefully we're accrediting the right people. He was talking about pitchers moving back and forth from relievers to starters, and had done a little bit of a study as to who's able to do it, you know, what kind of pitchers profile one way or another as to better relievers, better starters, guys who are able to make the transition from one way to another. And the list is long of guys that come up and debut as relievers, whether they work in the relief role for a somewhat extended period of time, maybe like Adam Wainwright always comes to mind for me with the Cardinals, mostly because they won a World Series that year with him as a closer. And then he was, you know, shortly moved into the rotation and became a high quality starter, right? But another guy that comes up all the time in talking about pitchers that have moved from one spot to another, rotation to bullpen and then back and forth, is Jobe Chamberlain. Formerly of the Yankees, worked with the Indians. I know he's been to a couple different ball clubs. For me, Chamberlain was just never quite given that role to succeed in, or never quite given a consistent role. It seemed that every offseason, because they were the Yankees, and this was the, you know, the mid-2000 Yankees, the Yankees that were always going for it, they were putting Chamberlain in a position where they needed him most, not where he most needed to be. And because of that, or because of that kind of analogy that you see from Carson moving from rotation into the bullpen and then back into the rotation, it kind of brought this article to mind that I'd read. And by and large, the premise of it was basically that you get one free move with a prospect. You get this one ability. It seems that any pitcher can kind of move this one time from rotation to bullpen or vice versa, and then go back to a role and be largely unaffected. It doesn't necessarily arrest or hold back the development of that pitcher. And to be honest with you, while that's just, you know, something I can tell you to make you to or help you feel a little bit better about, you know, I don't think at all that the development of Carson Fulmer has been stunted by a couple of weeks at the major league level throwing out of the bullpen for a couple different reasons, and this is one of them. I don't even know if, and this would be something kind of fun to look at, how long of a stint in transition, you know, in this next spot, do you really need to count as one? Because I mean, you could make the argument that maybe this one move doesn't even count for Carson, seeing as he was already stretched out, thrown into a bullpen, shortened up a little bit, but did have some longer outings, now moved back into rotation. I think the idea of presenting him a much tougher challenge of making that jump from double A to the majors was one that's going to benefit him down the line, even if it didn't exactly result in the kind of production that you'd hope to see in the 2016 season. I think that's something that he's going to be pointing to as, you know, I think his career turns out as a pretty good one still. I think that's going to be something he points to as kind of a developmental moment, a pretty big developmental moment in his young career. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We're taking you up to the pregame show. Got about an hour and a half until we begin that. 5:35 is when we get it started. It's the White Sox and A's with Chris Sale on the hill. He's going to face Ross Detweiler of the A's. But you've got White Sox Weekly up until then on WLS AM 890.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly, a little after 4 o'clock here on WLS AM 890, and we're coming up on the pregame show here at U.S. Cellular Field. White Sox and A's, Chris Sale, Ross Detweiler going to start the ball game this evening. You can join the White Sox in honoring Chicago area police and fire departments on Thursday, August 25th for Police and Fire Night. The first 10,000 fans receive a special Police and Fire Night commemorative t-shirt presented by UL. For more than a century, UL has been committed to fire safety. Learn more at ul.com/fire. For you to purchase tickets, it's a pretty easy process. Visit whitesox.com/PDFD. That's whitesox.com/PDFD. Or call 866-SOX-GAME. Pretty simple process there. We've been talking about a couple of things here on White Sox Weekly. We're coming up to an interview with Justin Morneau. Sat down with the White Sox DH in the dugout about an hour ago. Talked about a lot of things. Really interesting conversation with Justin. Happy to bring it to you. And in case you, well, don't, in case you miss it, we're going to have a way for you to get to it. But if you just keep listening, we'll have it for you in a little while here on the show. But we've been talking a lot, and a lot of people in baseball have been talking a lot about Bob Nightingale's piece in USA Today, in which he talked to Commissioner Rob Manfred about some of the rules that they're contemplating altering, changing, and even making in baseball here. Now, this is, I'll set the stage for you before, you know, in case you've missed the piece or haven't heard much conversation on it. This is very much a what-if kind of scenario from the commissioner's office. Some to less a degree than others. There are, you know, some things, some ideas in here that are a little more concrete than others, I suppose. But most of it is all kind of coming up around the new CBA that's going to be negotiated, or that is being negotiated right now. Current CBA, the current collective bargaining agreement between the Major League Baseball and the Players Association, expires December 1st. And obviously all these rule changes, all this stuff would have to, would be applied in the CBA, would all be collectively bargained. So with that in mind, some ideas are kind of being floated. Some trial balloons are being let up into the air to see how players, to see how fans, to see how organizations and coaching staffs all kind of feel about it. Now, the three big ones are these. The first, Bob writes, is that a pitch clock could be put on each and every pitch. Now, this exists in minor league baseball. It's a 20-second pitch clock. It would be enforced theoretically on all pitches. No word exactly on what the theoretical punishment would be, or the actual punishment, I guess, would be for a pitcher who exceeds the 20-second pitch clock, although a ball is usually what's been thrown around the most. You know, you exceed the 20-second clock and a ball is issued to the hitter. It's less so about the punishment than it is just kind of keeping a constant running number on hitters and on pitchers. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about rule changes to the game with the emphasis on making sure that the pace of play keeps up to what a modern baseball watching audience wants to see. Now, there are, you know, conversations, there are disagreements that the modern baseball watching audience is just fine. And thank you, we'll have our game the way we've had it. I would argue that for every 4 hour and 45 minute baseball game you see between the Red Sox and Yankees, there's probably one or two of them on the West Coast that don't go as long. I just picked the West Coast as a location, not necessarily a thing that makes baseball games go faster. But I, you know, there was a stretch consecutive years. I think it was like 3 years ago, 2 years in a row, the average time a game rose 5 minutes year over year. So it's, you know, adding 10 minutes in 2 years to a baseball game. And at that point, you know, we're testing the tensile strength of an attention span, I think. So the 20-second pitch clock is kind of the first thing out there, first thing that's been thrown out there. And that operates right now in the minor leagues. And I talked with Jacob Turner this afternoon about that 20-second pitch clock and what it means to pitchers. And I wanted to talk to Jacob because he's been in both the minors and majors this season as both a starter and reliever. So I thought maybe, you know, working in a different role, it might affect you more. We'll bring you that in just a second. Another one of the rules is potentially limiting the number of infield shifts that a team is able to use. Manfred cited a couple of statistics, a couple of numbers in this piece on USA Today, and I encourage you to go read it. It's a good one. Manfred said that 2,400 infield shifts were used by all teams 5 seasons ago. So, 5 years ago, 2011, every team utilized a total of 2,400 infield shifts. I mean, you think of all the situations in baseball. You think of all the games that we play in baseball. You think about the potential idea that maybe you just shift for a 1-1 count and maybe not for the 3-2 count to hold around. I mean, just all those, the different permutations. That 2,400 is a relatively small number. This year, Manfred told the USA Today, baseball's on pace for 28,000 shifts. 2,400, 28,000. That's obviously a marked rise in the rate of shifts. I'm not one that necessarily believes that the shift in and of itself is a bad idea. Try telling that to hitters, though, and they might actually hit you. Nobody likes hitting into these things, and nobody likes looking at them when they're at the plate. In fact, that's a large part of our conversation with Justin Morneau coming up in a little while here on White Sox Weekly. It is a very thoughtful conversation with Justin that we'll get to in a little bit. So limiting the number of shifts that a defense could employ throughout the course of a game might add a little wrinkle of strategy, and it would definitely change the game the way it's being played right now. The third one, and we'll get to all these kind of in sequence here, but I want to get to Jacob Turner before we have to hit a break real quickly. The third one would be employing some kind of rule whereby a reliever would have to face more than one batter when he comes out of the bullpen. None of this, you know, loogie kind of stuff. None of the one man, one batter, one pitcher kind of deal. None of the, I think Tony La Russa maybe gets a little bit of a bad rap on this because certainly managers were doing it before him, but because of the success he had with the Cardinals and kind of in the early to mid 2000s and the notoriety that he had of using, you know, a guy like Mike Tuchinski just for the one batter and then making the bullpen and making a call to the bullpen, changing out. I think that's where, you know, the Tony La Russa bullpen management school kind of has gotten a couple of its knocks. But that's another potential rule change that the commissioner posited to the USA Today and Bob Nightingale just the other day. So I talked to Jacob Turner for a couple of different reasons, and I mentioned him. The fact that he's worked in the minors this year with that pitch clock, the fact that he's worked in the majors without one. He's worked in both roles as a reliever and a starter. Wanted to get his thoughts on those potential ideas of changing the game some. So here he is, Jacob Turner, on White Sox Weekly. We talked with him just about an hour and a half ago.
So you've thrown a little bit with the 20-second clock in the minors this year and thrown without it here. Does it affect guys to a point where they're thinking about it on a constant basis, or is it just kind of out of sight, out of mind?
I mean, for me personally, it's never really come into play, and I think a lot of times it just depends on the umpiring crew you have, especially in the minor leagues. There's a lot of times the clock would run out on guys. Maybe a reliever takes more time when he comes set or something like that, or they're going through the signs a little longer. And as long as the pace of play has been fine, the umpires would usually let it go. Sometimes I think if somebody wants to get a little more involved, maybe they make a big deal about it. But for me personally, it doesn't make any difference at all. I don't really notice it here or there, to be honest with you.
Do you think if it were, like, let's say, relatively strictly enforced, you know what I mean, where if a guy's not set at the 20-second mark here in the big leagues, do you think fans would see a huge difference?
I don't know how much it would actually speed up the game. Yeah. I think there's probably only, it's hard to put a number on it, but maybe 10 to 20% of guys that would be consistently over that every time. I think most guys would be under that. But at the same time, you know, if it affects guys on the field, you know, you can't change rules that affect guys' performance on the field. You know, if their routine is to walk around the mound six times before they throw a pitch and that helps them be a better pitcher, that's what they got to do. So I think that's the biggest issue. If it's affecting guys' performance on the field, it's not something that we as players would want.
Something else that had been mentioned is maybe limiting relievers to certain kind of restrictions, or at the very least, like, guy comes in, he's got to face more than one hitter. Does that change this game, the way we play it right now, in a dramatic sense?
I don't see any reason for making that rule change. I mean, the game of baseball is flourishing right now, so what's the point of making a change that maybe speeds up the game by 2 minutes? It's not something that's going to move the needle in a sense of making the games go from 3 hours to 2 hours. So, I think, and at the end of the day, it's about winning. It's not about how fast we can play the game. So if it helps us win by having one guy face one guy or have a guy throw two innings, then I think that's what should happen.
What if that reliever change weren't so much about the change of the pace, but like the strategy of the game? You know, let's say baseball wants a little more offense or something. Do you think they could find it with having relievers have to face more than one hitter?
I don't want any more offense. So you'd have to talk to somebody that wants more offense.
That's fair. That's fair.
But like I said, it's about winning. So if we have a better chance of winning by having one guy face one guy, and we had to do that the whole game, then that's what you do the whole game. So, as far as more offense, I'm definitely not for more offense.
I guess it'd be tough to find a pitcher who wants more offense unless that guy's wearing a jersey. That makes sense.
So that's Jacob Turner, and I took his advice. I went to go talk to a guy who wanted to see a little bit more offense in the game, and I guess from Jacob Turner, I kind of got the sense that some of these ideas would be kind of a tougher sell to players. Whether that, you know, is actually a hiccup in CBA discussions, that's kind of a different story, a horse of a different color, really. But I did get the sense that a lot of guys like it just fine the way it is, and that's to be expected. This is the way they've been doing it for a while. Not the case with Justin Morneau. Justin was much more willing to talk about potential. Not that this is a knock on either Jacob or, you know, one way or another, but just, you know, a guy who's been in this game for quite some time in Morneau, and don't tell him I said that, he'll probably beat me up. But a guy who has seen some changes to this game, liked some of them, not liked some of them, and wants to see some more that maybe aren't even on the commissioner's list. So we come back. I want to get into some some of these other potential changes. We talked a little about the 22nd rule and the relievers facing at least two hitters. I want to get into the limiting of defensive shifts some too when we come back. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. I want to tell you real quickly, though, that Saturday, August 27th, you can come see the White Sox take on the Mariners. That's a 6:10 p.m. game. All fans are invited to stay for a spectacular post-game fireworks show. It's presented by the Magellan Corporation. For tickets, call 866-SOX-GAME or go to WhiteSox.com. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly. We'll be back in a minute here on WLS AM 890.
Today, Sox versus A's. Broadcast begins at 5:35.
And you're home for White Sox baseball.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We got you for another hour and 10 minutes, I guess, 5:35. We start the pregame show for the Sox and A's. I want to tell you, though, that with MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, you can watch every out-of-market game live in HD on over 400 supported devices. It includes a free subscription to At-Bat Premium, the number one app for live baseball. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details. It is a fantastic development, a fantastic advancement for the human race, for everyone, really. I mean, it's just this remarkable piece of technology that you can have in your hand and watch baseball anywhere. It's really, it's remarkable. Probably next to visiting the moon, next to landing on the moon, probably our greatest achievement as a human race. I think that's probably what it is. So 312-591-8900, as I delve into insanity, is the phone number here for White Sox Weekly. And we were talking a little bit about the rule changes that Rob Manfred, Commissioner of Baseball, had brought up to Bob Nightingale, USA Today. I brought some of those rule changes up to Jacob Turner. I brought some of those rule changes up to Justin Morneau this afternoon. We heard from Jacob Turner. We're going to hear from Justin Morneau probably right after the 4:30 news. About 4:35, we'll have our conversation with the White Sox DH, Justin Morneau. We got really into some of the potential rule changes, and even some that Mr. Manfred hadn't kind of brought up in his piece with Bob Nightingale. We talked a little bit about the 22nd rule, the idea of a 20-second pitch count on pitchers. You know, you got to throw in 20 seconds or else something happens. It's a ball or something. And I think generally that's fine. I don't mind that at all. Jacob Turner kind of agreed, in as much as guys don't really seem to notice it. And unless you were to get really prickly about enforcing it, which is possible. I mean, you know, you could, if you put the clock up there, without telling umpires, let's say theoretically it's up there in the big leagues next season, just to play out the hypothetical, it would be kind of dumb, I guess, to put it up there and not have umpires, you know, go out there and enforce it, not give them the tools to enforce it, whether that's, you know, administering a ball or a warning and then a ball or, I don't know, something more drastic if the commissioner, if baseball feels like it needs to be that way. I doubt it, but it's possible. But for Turner and for a lot of other guys, it doesn't seem like the 20-second clock is all that big a deal. So, you know, great, thumbs up. I'm cool with it. 312-591-8900 if you're not, or if you agree with it, you can hit us on Twitter, too, at C1McKnight is the Twitter handle. Now, the other purported change was, well, there's two more, and I want to get to this one first. Limiting shifts that a defense is able to use over the course of a game. Rob Manfred told Bob Nightingale and quoted some stats saying that shifts 5 years ago were about 2,400 throughout the course of a year. This year we're on pace for 28,000. That is a lot more. But I don't know that it necessarily makes the game worse, and I know for sure that it almost by definition can't make the game go faster, taking the shift out of the game. Yeah, you'd see more offense, and if that's your plan, if that's the idea, and you want to see more offense, okay, that's cool. Let's talk about it in that through that kind of lens. Let's address it in that manner. But if these rule changes, as many of them in baseball have been over the last couple of years, have been to quicken the pace of the game, which I'm all about, I don't know that cutting off the shift for a club is the way to go about it. Now, here's why. baseball, at least right now, has no clock, right? I mean, it's got the break clock, but there's no in-game clock. Now, that could change with the 20-second clock where you have to throw it, but for right now, there is no clock. And the only way to measure time throughout the course of a baseball game is the 27 outs that you get. 24 if you're the home team, you don't get to hit. You don't have to hit, I guess. Those outs are your measurement of time. They're your unit. And if you're telling me that it's going to take longer to record those outs because you can't put your infielders wherever you want, or your outfielders for that matter, wherever you want, then the game is going to therefore take longer. I hope that makes some sense. But by making it, I'll put it to you a different way, by making it harder for your infield to record outs, you're making the outs take a longer period of time, therefore kind of extending the game. I get wanting to put a little bit of offense back into the game. We've seen home runs rise at an enormous rate this season. They had been going down fairly steadily, home runs, power numbers in this game going down fairly steadily over the last handful of years. Not to ridiculous degrees. You know, they weren't dropping off by half and then half again, but they are up there this year. The long ball is everywhere. And there's a lot of good, really good reasons as to potentially why. Some really good research being done on exactly why that is. But if you want more offense in this game, I don't know that, you know, limiting your defense is exactly the way to go about it. I'm of that opinion. Hitters, guys like Justin Morneau, they are of a very different opinion. And they should be. It's their livelihood to put the ball in play and create some runs. I realize now that we're right up against the 4:30 news. We'll get to a couple of things after this 4:30 news. We'll hear from Justin Morneau. We got an injury update on Miguel Gonzalez. A couple of questions on Twitter, at C1 McKnight, that we will get to. And your phone calls, as always, if you like, 312-591-8900. Right now, though, we're going to step aside for the 4:30 news here on WLS AM 890.
Stand by to refresh your news feed at the top and bottom of every hour. Or right now at WLSAM.com.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. We're an hour in and got an hour to go here before we get to the pregame show. It'll be the White Sox and A's, of course. Couple updates here for injury news and notes. The A's have scratched Jesse Hahn for tomorrow's start. It'll be Zach Neale going instead against Jose Quintana for the White Sox. Of course, Chris Sale and Ross Detweiler are your starters today. Billy Butler scratched from the lineup. He's actually hit Chris Sale fairly well over the course of his career. He is not going to be playing for the A's today. He is sick and a little under the weather, so won't be tormenting Chris Sale, which is a good thing because everybody seems to... There's always that one guy who has your number, and for Chris Sale, it's Billy Butler. For Greg Maddux, it was Tony Gwynn. You know, I mean, it was those kind of... It happens regardless of whether it's a Hall of Famer or whether it's just some dude who happens to hit you pretty hard. No Billy Butler in the lineup for the A's. Been talking about a number of different things, and I want to let you know what we've got on the show. We were talking quite a bit about the column that Bob Nightingale wrote, interviewing Commissioner Rob Manfred about the potential rule changes, ideas, kind of spitballing ideas that the commissioner's office was kind of having about potential rule changes for coming seasons. Of course, the collective bargaining agreement is up and going to be renegotiated prior to December 1st. So that's why, you know, this whole topic of conversation is kind of percolating. I wanted to talk with Justin Morneau just to catch up with him, and the conversation turned into one about robot umpires and rule changes to the game and all this kind of good stuff. Really, really some interesting stuff from Morneau this afternoon. Wanted to bring it to you here on White Sox Weekly. Started out by asking him, you know, over the last couple of weeks, the results have looked pretty good, but we haven't seen him in the field, and I, you know, just wanted to make sure that he feels as good as the results have looked so far in his White Sox career.
Yeah, I think it took a little time to get the legs underneath me and kind of feel comfortable. And, you know, every plate appearance, every at bat. You know, now it's been more about the routine and trying to figure out how the pitcher's trying to get me out. And you know, the fun part of it, the chess game between you and the pitcher and the catcher and going through that whole side of it. So that part's always been enjoyable for me, you know, going through that battle and to get the the other stuff out of the way, you know, just how I'm feeling every day, and then that stuff has come, and that's been nice. So it's been fun. Obviously, it'd be nice if we were winning some more games.
Sure.
But, just to be out there has been good.
I think a couple of weeks ago, Bill Melton and I were in the booth watching a ball game, and it was kind of late in the evening, and we were talking. You happened to be up to bat, and we were asking about, you know, exactly how you fit into this lineup. It was a couple of weeks in, maybe a week and a half in, and I said something stupid like, I just don't know how much pop Justin Morneau has left. And then sure enough, next pitch, you go yard over the right field bleachers, and Bill says, I think he's fine. How much do you feel that part of the game has changed for you? How much do you feel that part of the game has changed league-wide, because we've seen so many home runs this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I think with guys throwing harder now, guys' location isn't as important, and guys are, you know, they trust that they throw 95, 96, and that's hard enough to hit, and they're trying to throw it as hard as they can and get it over the plate, as opposed to, you know, when I first came up, it was trying to locate and hit the corners and movement, and, you know, it was a cutter and a sinker, and most guys had a cutter and a sinker, and, you know, we're just trying to get you out on movement, and now it's turned more back into a power game, and it's power versus power a lot of times.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to square up 95 or 96. You know, there's a big difference between 90 and 95, and you know, I think that's something that I think that's part of the reason why I think the strike zone's gotten a little bit bigger. The pitchers have started throwing harder. They're better than they were when I first came up. You know, the closer was the guy who threw 95, 96, and now you see the long guy that comes in the game throwing 95, 96, and, you know, it used to be the goal to get in the bullpen early in the game and try and get that long guy in the game that used to be, you know, the swing man, the sixth starter, whatever he was. He wasn't quite good enough to be in the rotation, and your goal was to try and get him in the game early, and now it seems like that guy's a young kid, you know, who doesn't know exactly where it's going most of the time, but throws hard and has good secondary stuff, so it's a good battle, and the game's, you know, kind of evolved in that way, but I think that's kind of what makes it fun. You need to be able to adjust to continue to survive. And, you know, for me, I think injuries and all that kind of stuff have sort of played a part in that, but also just the fact that I think it's gotten a little more difficult to hit, too. So,
how much have you seen, or how have you seen hitters, you know, change their approach? You know, we talk about that bullpen and that swing guy. He doesn't exist anymore. If he does, he's throwing 95 with movement. How have you seen guys change, you know, in the dugout, in between at bats, try and combat that?
I think one of the things that's really changed is the striking out. You know, it's not as big a deal, I don't think, to strike out anymore. There's I think guys figure if they're going to make an out, they may as well make an out swinging hard, and, you know, the two-strike approach. There's still guys that do it. There's still guys that, you know that they're not power guys and need to get on base. But I think for the most part, most guys are going up there, and you know, it was kind of unheard of for a leadoff hitter to strike out 100 times.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as bad anymore. If you're still getting on base and you're driving the ball, your slugging percentage is, you know, is up, you're getting a second base and all that kind of stuff, I think it's changed that way in a little bit, but I think the pitching has kind of had something to do with that. You know, it's very difficult to just sit there and try and slap the ball or put the ball in play when, you know, your seventh inning guy's throwing 97 and all that kind of stuff. So I think teams are trying to score their runs in bunches a little bit more now. You know, walking is stressed a lot, and, you know, get on base and three-run homer, especially American League games,
yeah,
different than National League game. But, you know, there's some things that have changed that way, and it's been interesting to watch and see how it's evolved.
So the shift is kind of one of the things that has been brought up by Commissioner about maybe limiting the number of shifts that a team could use throughout the course of a ball game. I don't know, does that, or maybe making a reliever face more than one hitter at a time, do anything for you?
Well, I think in the National League, I'll answer the reliever one first, but the National League, I think it happens less unless your starter is pitching into the eighth inning, but it doesn't happen as much in the National League because you have to worry about when you're going to pinch hit.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to extend a guy out for extra outs or whatever it is. There's a lot that goes into it, so it's a little different National League, American League. Yeah, American League, you can get away with using three relievers in one inning because you don't have to worry about the pitcher spot coming up second the next inning and all those other things that go into it. But the shifts for me, as an offensive player, I think you can turn a power guy in either you stay a power guy and you're going to hit for a lower average because most of your power is going to happen on the pull side, and you load three guys up on that side of the infield. And,
right.
You know, if you hit the ball in the air, you got a chance. If you hit it on the ground, you have no chance. And so you either turn a power guy into trying to be an average guy, trying to go back to hitting the ball the other way, using the whole field, you're going to hit for less power, but you're going to be a higher average guy. And it's hard to determine the value in that. You know, if you're getting on base more, if your slugging percentage falls, there's a lot of things that go into it. But, you know, I had a simple solution for that, I think, is put a line down behind second base out to center field and say you can have two guys on either side of the line. I mean, it seems pretty simple. You know, if you want to limit it that, you have a legal defense in basketball. You have there's some strategy there, and obviously it's changed the game. I think we talk about people say, you know, they want to see more runs scored, they want to see all that kind of stuff.
Right.
The easiest way is to just make guys stay in positions or in certain areas of the field, and I think there's going to be a lot more holes out there to open up. So it's I don't think there's one simple solution. I don't know. I think the other thing we can do, which I know probably isn't going to happen anytime while I'm still playing, but an electronic strike zone, I think, where every time you walk up to the plate, you know what the strike zone is.
Right.
And I think that would force guys to throw the ball over the plate a little bit more. That might help with offense. I'm not sure, but I've talked to pitchers about this. There's certain guys that say they're for it. There's certain guys that say they're against it. They said, well, we would hate it as hitters because that slider that looks like it almost bounces would hit the bottom of the strike zone. I said, but at least you would know every time you walked up to the plate exactly what the strike zone is, and you could prepare for that. And I think that would allow guys to be more aggressive in the zone as opposed to feeling like they need to protect the plate with two strikes. So there's a situation with the bases loaded and, you know, you're on the road and the crowd's on its feet. People are human. They get caught up in the emotion of it. And, you know, if that pitcher throws a ball that's just an inch or two off the plate, he's a good chance the guy's going to ring him up. You get caught up in the excitement of it. And, you know, even though it may not be a strike, it may be a very good pitch, and it might be, you know, the best pitch the guy can make in that count, it still might not be on the plate. And that's kind of what is frustrating for hitters. And I think if we kind of control that stuff, I think that might help offense as much as anything.
See, I think that's the introduction of a standardized strike zone would be really interesting, especially, you know, robot umpire-wise, right? I mean, and I think the cool part about whether it's baseball as a union, as members, as players, or as fans, like, you get people on either side. Like, when we finish doing this, we're going to have phone calls screaming about how ridiculous it is to take humans out of the game, and there's going to be phone calls screaming that it's terrible that you have an umpire who can be, you know, convinced by a pitcher that extra 3 inches outside is something he deserves. I got to imagine that as much as anything else is, you know, if a guy's doing a good job, if it's Greg Maddux, you know, in 99, buying more real estate out there, that's got to be as frustrating as anything else when you're up there trying to have that at bat.
Yeah, I think, and the catcher almost matters as much as anything too, you know.
Oh, that's true.
How he makes the pitch look when it comes in, where he sets up, and all the rest of that stuff. You know, you see guys that guys with respect around the league and the guys that are very good at it, and they get more calls. I mean, they have ways of rating catchers now that show that some guys get more pitches in certain areas than other guys do, and I don't know. I think anybody would rather have it right than have it be, you know, there would still be an umpire back there. I think it's as simple as green light, red light, you know, ball strike on the scoreboard, but still going to have to call guys out at home, and still, you know, I don't know. I think if we have all this technology, why would we not use it to make the game as good as it can be, you know? The only thing you really see arguments over now, because every play on the bases is reviewable, is the strike zone. And you see it's so frustrating because there's so much at stake every at-bat and every pitch. You know, losing one game can be the difference between getting in the playoffs and not getting in the playoffs. And if it comes down to, you know, a call that ends up being a bases-loaded walk to a bases-loaded strikeout or the other way around, I mean, it can be very very frustrating. And you can see why, you know, guys just boil over and they get frustrated. And I'm not saying this against the umpires. I mean, they're human.
Yeah.
People make mistakes. It's all part of the game. When we make mistakes, we swing at pitches we shouldn't swing at, and not blaming that on anybody else. I mean, that's part of it. The pitchers are good, and sometimes you chase. But I think it, for the best of everyone, would just knowing exactly what it is every time you walked up to the plate, and the pitcher knows, and then the pitcher's not standing out there yelling at the umpire, and there's no unnecessary blame for anybody else, because, you know, if the pitch was a strike the time before he threw it there, and now all of a sudden it's not a strike, then he gets frustrated. If you take a pitch that's off the plate, and the next time it gets called a strike, you get frustrated, and you know, it ends up impacting the game in a way where, if you're not mentally strong enough to fight through that or to put it behind you quickly, it can really affect the rest of your at-bat, and that's something that's hard to figure out, hard to learn as a player. And yes, it is part of the game, but does it have to be part of the game? That's the real question.
That's a really good question. Where are you at physically at this point? Robin said that we can see you out there probably playing a little first base sooner rather than later, I think. Do you feel the same way? And, you know, I know there's 41 games after tonight, but, you know, free agent at the end of the season, and how are you thinking about next year?
I haven't got that far yet. But,
fair enough.
You know, I told him when we were in Miami, if he needed me to go out there, you know, the interleague and not being able to play for 3 days, just had three pinch hits there. But, you know,
one good one.
The defense part of it, to jump out there and play nine innings, is going to be a little difficult, you know. But now that I have my legs underneath me, I've been taking ground balls every day. I've been doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've told him if he needs me, I can run out there. And it's also the best chance of staying on the field and you know, getting the at-bats. And I think the at-bats are the most important thing, just having that lineup, having another left-handed hitter in there. And however that happens, I'm happy with it. But, you know, if it helps Abreu get a day off over there, give him a little rest, and I'm open to it. You know, it's something that I enjoy playing defense. I've worked hard to become better defensively throughout my whole career. You know, I was drafted as a catcher, so it wasn't something that I really was comfortable when I first came up, and took a lot of hard work to be comfortable over there and feel like I can help a team out defensively. So it's something that I enjoy doing, and hopefully I'll be out there, like he said, sooner than later. So.
Before we let you go, as you've kind of dropped into this offense, kind of in the middle of this lineup and being a big part of grinding out at bats, making sure guys get on, driving in runs, like we saw a couple of nights ago, what do you think this offense needs to be a little bit more consistent, to be able to put up that three spot in an inning more than just kind of the one time at the beginning of a ball game like we saw the other night?
Well, I think lengthening it out at bats, and there's certain times when, you know, you can't let a pitcher off the hook. I think obviously they changed pitchers after the first inning the other night in Cleveland.
Right.
We had a good first inning, so it's hard to say that, you know, we didn't put them away because we didn't get a chance to continue to add pressure and continue to, you know, to have lengthy at bats. We had some good walks early in that game, and there was a lot of good things that happened, and then they brought in a different guy, and it sort of just changed. But you know, you have to give him credit, he threw the ball well. But you know, I think that there's certain times where, you know, if we have a long inning playing defense, we need to be able to recognize when we need to go up there and try and make their pitcher throw some extra pitches, have some long at bats, and give our pitcher a chance to sit down for a little bit and get some rest and be able to go back out there and give us a quick inning defensively. But I think there's some length that young hitters, it's hard as a young hitter to recognize when you need to go up there and try and make the guy throw some pitches, and when you're up there and you're just hoping to get a hit every at bat, and those other things don't always play into it. You know, it's am I going to play tomorrow if I don't get any hits? And it's hard as a young player to sit there and recognize the situation and sometimes give up a strike or give up a couple of strikes to be able to, for the good of the team and for the good of the lineup. And when you have everybody kind of on that same page, I think that's when you make the other team's pitcher work, and that's when you end up with those long 20-pitch innings, 22-pitch innings, and that's when the guys start making mistakes. If they're out there throwing 10, 12 pitches every inning, they're comfortable, they're fresh, they're able to command, they're not, you know, feeling like they're having to do anything extra. And when you have those longer innings and you force them into those offensive counts, or you force them into working, and then you take advantage of those mistakes, I think. And that's all part of evolving. And, you know, we're seeing some young hitters here, but we're seeing, you know, I think Tim's getting better. I think he's starting to figure it out a little bit at this level, which is hard to do. It's been fun to kind of have some conversations with those guys and try and help them along a little bit, too. So.
Justin, really appreciate you sitting down, man.
No problem.
That's White Sox DH, Justin Morneau. A really cool conversation with him. Really enjoyed it. Thanks to him for hanging out with us. He advocates the robot umpire, and so do I. For all of our future robot overlords listening, I do. I advocate the robot umpire, and I embrace your future rule. Seriously, though, I really do like the idea of having a standardized strike zone that's adjudicated by something technological, some sort of machine. This, you know, we've got the pitch track stuff. We've got, you know, the ability to kind of determine where a ball crossed the strike zone and where it crossed the play. I would love for that technology to be you know, tightened up some and then applied to this game, I think for all the reasons that, Morneau kind of detailed through our interview there. And yes, I do, before anybody else, you know, gets it twisted or one way or the other, I think absolutely the biggest drawback to, at least that I can think of off the top of my head, to pitch tracks that you see on, you know, whether it's regardless of where you're watching the game, ESPN or GN or Comcast or wherever you're watching it, the strike zone doesn't change size. At least I don't think any of them do. They don't change size according to the hitter. That's doable. I'm pretty sure that that's doable, given, you know, our level of technology here in the 21st century. I think we're able to apply it and we're able to make it happen and be a fair strike zone for everybody that comes up to the plate, whether you're Jose Altuve or whether you're Chris Sale playing in a National League ballpark. I think we can do that. So as long as we're able to make these advancements and apply them to the game and make it more uniform and more fair and cleaner and better and just get the call right. I mean, that's where I land on replay all the time. Get it right the first time around. I don't see any reason to not do it. Justin Morneau doesn't see any reason to not do it either. I hope that's our future. You can tee off for charity and join Chicago White Sox Charities for the Field of Greens Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Miller Lite. This year's tournament will be held Monday, August 22nd. That is this coming Monday. It's going to be at Harborside International Golf Center. Join the fun and sign up your foursome by visiting whitesoxcharities.org or calling 312-674-5391. We'll get the 5 o'clock news coming up in just a little bit. We'll hear from Robin Ventura and an injury update on Miguel Gonzalez, too. We've got about half an hour of White Sox Weekly left here on WLS AM 890.
Today.
Sox versus A's. Broadcast begins at 5:35.
On your home for White Sox baseball.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Crack the window open here at U.S. Cellular Field as we are getting closer and closer to baseball. A couple of clouds overhead, but I don't think they've got any rain in them. Nice day at the ballpark here as the Sox will take on the A's. Lineups are set. We'll get those to you in just a couple of moments. Chris Sale, Ross Detweiler going to be the starters for this afternoon's ballgame. No Billy Butler in the lineup for the A's. I think we mentioned that a little bit earlier. Butler's a little under the weather. And tomorrow's starter for the A's has been changed. It will not be Jesse Hahn anymore. He has been scratched. And instead, it's going to be Zach Neal working for the A's in the rotation there. That'll be tomorrow against Jose Quintana. Wanted to bring you Robin Ventura's comments today. We've been talking a lot about the column that Bob Nightingale wrote a little while ago, a couple of days ago, about potential rule changes. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, was kind of floating out there, the 20-second clock on pitchers. The idea of a reliever having to face maybe more than one batter by rule, you know, having come out there and you got to face at least two guys, or potentially limiting the number of shifts in a ball game that a team can use defensively. And we've talked with Jacob Turner about that 20-second pitch clock and the reliever rule. We talked with Justin Morneau about a lot of different things. And that interview, by the way, a really good one, and thanks to Justin for the time and sitting down with us. But you can find the entire interview a little bit later this afternoon on WLSAM.com. Click over to the White Sox tab. All the White Sox Weekly interviews go up there. Justin Morneau's interview will be up there shortly. Before we get to Robin, who mentioned a couple of different things about some rehabbing White Sox, I think we told you at the top of the show that Avi Garcia has indeed headed out on a rehab assignment to AAA Charlotte, so that is good news there. Saw him in BP yesterday. He certainly looked fairly healthy. Alex Avila was running the bases today and pushing some weights around, so that's a good thing, too. And let's see, who's left? Oh, yeah, Brett Lurie doing fine in a rehab and some rehab work, too. We'll hear from Robin on all those gentlemen. Also on Tyler Saladino, who's been out of the lineup with a kind of a minor issue. Hear from him on that, too. But also about the a couple of things in that Nightingale piece about limiting shifts and whatnot. You can, though, before we get to that, hit the beach on December 3rd with Ron Kittle, Harold Baines, and some of your favorite White Sox players. You get to travel to Iberostar Playa Mita in Riviera Nayarit, Mexico for a week of fun activities and VIP events. I got to figure out how to get in on that. Oh, here's how. Visit applevacations.com/White Sox to book. That's applevacations.com/White Sox to book. Again, it's a trip to Iberostar Playa Mita in Riviera Nayarit, Mexico. That'd be a good little week there. Real nice little week in the, what is that, in December? Yeah, December 3rd. It's a good way to do it. Be back just for Christmas. Your whole family will be jealous of the tan that you've got and the stories that you have to tell hanging out with Ron Kittle and Harold Baines. Cool stuff there. All right, Robin Ventura talking with reporters this afternoon here on White Sox Weekly started out the conversation basically by answering the question, what's up with Tyler Saladino and when can we expect him back at second base in the White Sox lineup?
Today, possibly tomorrow, and then you have the off day Monday. So, you know, he could play. It's just better that he gets a little time off to be able to kind of nurse it back.
Nothing serious, just kind of
nothing serious. Yeah, just, you know, a playing everyday thing that, you know, he's been playing pretty good, and I think getting on base, doing a lot of you know, things that for a while he wasn't doing, and I think right now it's caught up with him somewhat.
This time of year, what is the benefit or lack of benefit of having batting practice or not having it?
What's the lack of it?
I mean, what is, better phrased, is it batting practice beneficial this time of year after everybody's...
It can be. I mean, I think all during the year you have days, you have periods of time where, you know, sometimes it's good to have, sometimes it doesn't matter if you have it or not. You know, right now I think it's good for us to go out there and have it and get out here and run around and get loose and you know, swing the bat.
What were the benefits for you for batting practice? What did you try to take out of it and get ready for a game?
Well, I think you have your routine. That's probably the biggest thing is you're going out on the field, you're getting your ground balls. And I think batting practice, you're just, you know, you're moving it around the field, using your hands, and you're being able to visually see it. And for me, that was always a big thing to be on the field. I didn't necessarily like the cage because you don't really see, you know, where it goes, the result of it, and if you like it in the cage, everything kind of seems okay. And I think being on the field, you get to kind of see the result of it.
Robin, you said in the past, sometimes, especially guys who've had long careers, they just sometimes have off years. Is that what's going on with Shields, or is it more than that? Is he just having an off year?
I think he's having an off period. You know, there's stuff there. I mean, we can see it. We've seen it. You know, I think even in Boston, he had a nice run there. You know, this is a tough place to pitch, especially if you're not locating exactly where you want. And guys are putting good swings on it. It's a small ballpark, and that's where you can get hurt the most, especially in the summer.
Avila closer? I mean, is it next week?
I hope so. I hope he's getting... Well, I mean, he's getting a lot closer, and I expect him at some point to go out here pretty quick.
Avi, too, is he...
He's already out. Yeah, he went out the other day, and we're getting... You know, we'll get reports on him as he plays and then see how he feels right after that. Same with Brett.
What did you see from Marcus Semien when he first came up here to... How he's doing now?
You know, Marcus is always, he's just a cagey player. I think for us, we moved him, you know, around the infield. Somehow we did with Saladino. He played all over the place, but, you know, offensively, you knew he had something there. He just had, you know, professional type of bats, can grind stuff out, knock in a run, hit a homer, can run too. And I think that's the thing that he's carried on is he's learned a little bit more about what guys are trying to do to him and what he can do. And I think that's what makes him effective.
Do you see him as a shortstop when he was here? I mean, do you think he could be an everyday shortstop?
Yeah, I mean, you saw him do that. I mean, for us, he played quite a bit of third base. I feel like he could do that too if he really, you know, stuck to it.
The commissioner made some comments about changing the amount of shifts you can make on defense. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that's going to be a tough one. I think being able to limit shifts and things like that, because you're also talking, I know they're doing it to kind of speed up the game, but it seems like that would make it long. It seems more offensive if you can't shift and try and prevent a team from scoring runs. So it seems like it might make it a longer game instead of a faster game. So, you know, I'm sure they're kicking all kinds of stuff around, but you know, I know as a manager, you want to do whatever you can to stop the other side from scoring or getting on base, and if that means putting nine guys on one side of the field, you know, it's the job of the other team to counteract that.
Are you surprised more guys don't do that, like bunt against the shifts or things like that?
Yeah, but you know, a lot of guys haven't grown up bunting, so it's not just as easy as, you know, he should just go ahead and bunt, or you know, maybe they're not fast enough to be able to do it. But yeah, I think it'll eventually come full circle to where guys will be able to do it a little bit more because it's been happening to them for so long.
How about the other ideas that he floated, the time limit on the pitchers and the amount of pitching changes?
I'm sure they're kicking all kinds of stuff around. You know, the 20-second clock is interesting to me. I think anytime you're speeding up the game of just the lull, that, you know, that's a good thing. You know, pitching changes, again, you don't want to see a guy, because you've already made a couple moves, just get his brains beat in out there just because you can't make a move.
That's the manager, Robin Ventura, talking a little bit to reporters today. And I think that's kind of where, you know, if these rule changes kind of keep going from where they're at, you know, the idea of making a reliever throw against a couple of hitters as opposed to just the one, or limiting shifts, you know, there's going to have to be kind of a, I would imagine there would have to be some kind of give back. You know, you're taking tools out of the toolbox of managers, of bullpens, of organizations. So it should be interesting to see what that give and take is like. As the, you know, the kind of negotiations go back and forth. We're going to take a quick break here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, a little bit of an injury update from Miguel Gonzalez to see where he's at, recovering from a groin strain. Also bring you, as we always do, the White Sox Week in Review here on White Sox Weekly. But also want to let you know this. Just one second. Yes, Family Sundays, presented by Coca-Cola at U.S. Cellular Field. Feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level and $15 in the lower level. You get special kid-focused activities throughout the ballpark. Plus, parking is available for only $10. And this Family Sunday, you know, tomorrow, Jose Quintana pitches. So that's a reason to bring everybody out. Visit WhiteSox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. We'll be right back with more here on White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890 and the Sox Radio Network.
WLS AM 890
and White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We're closing it up a couple of minutes here, 5:35, 15 minutes before we start the pregame show, Sox and A's. Before we get out of here, there's two things we owe you. Miguel Gonzalez spoke with some reporters today, just kind of a quick update on where he's at, returning from the groin strain. Wanted to get it to you, so before anything else happens, here is Sox starter Miguel Gonzalez.
Rehab assignment at some point, maybe a start or something like that.
We haven't talked about it yet, but I might get off the mound tomorrow. Maybe throw a couple fastballs, change up, see how it feels, just fill it out. Nothing special.
Frustrating at the time because you were on such a solid roll at that point, and then to just kind of have this thing pop up on a pitch.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to swallow. You know, especially the way, you know, it was going for me. And you just got to keep grinding it out, man. I feel much better now. Hopefully tomorrow, see how it feels, fill it out, and we'll go from there.
So that's White Sox starter Miguel Gonzalez talking about where he's coming back. Sounds like it's going to be a little bit longer than he'd like, for sure. Hopefully it's just the 15 days, but it kind of sounds like Anthony Renato is going to get a little run in that rotation. And he's stretched out and ready to roll. You can join us for Elvis Night and post-game fireworks as the White Sox face the Seattle Mariners. That's Friday, August 26th at 7:10 p.m. For tickets, visit WhiteSox.com. Got to bring you the week in review for the Sox. A couple of drama-packed moments. Had an Adam Eaton grand slam in the ninth to get to. Wanted to bring you all the good stuff from the week that was in White Sox baseball. We do it every week here on White Sox Weekly, and we call it, though it is unimaginative because I name things, but the people behind us, you know, Dave and Jonathan, they do good work and put together a darn good highlight reel. Here it is, your week in review.
Here's the first pitch from Marlins Park. This is going to go for a home run. If it's fair, may have hit the foul pole. He's hit his 10th, and the Sox lead 1-0 on the first pitch of the game. How do you do? Is it Graff to go to? Or is it swinging a long one to right? This one's going to go to the bleachers at right. Or no, hits a home run. And the Sox are within a run as they trail 2-1. And for Justin Morneau, his fourth. Here's Frazier. He can put us ahead with his 32nd home run. The pitch is swinging a long one. Left center field. This is going to go. He's hit his 32nd and the Sox lead. Or no, that's off the top of the wall. It came back in the ballpark. He's at second base, two runs across. I thought it was in the first row in left center field. Came off the top of the wall and came back into the field to play. And the 3-2, Napoli swinging a line drive. Frazier's got it. Dives for the bag. Did he get him? Yep. Line drive, double play. Five unassisted, five, and then unassisted force out at double play at third. How about that? Here's a swing and a long one to right field. Down the line to the bleachers. Slamola. Sox put a four spot on one swing from Eaton and now lead. And they lead 10-7. How about that one?
You have got to be horning me.
And the 1-0 to Justin, swinging a high fly ball deep left field. This is going to send Guyer onto the warning track. Still running at the track. Over his head, off the wall. That's going to get two in and maybe three. Abreu hits third. He's being waved in. Lindor, the relay, no relay. 3-0 Sox on the double by Morneau to the opposite field.
The 1-1 from James Shields. Here it is, a broken bat fly ball down the right field line. Over to get it. Sanchez, the second baseman, makes a basket catch in foul territory. What a play by Sanchez down the right field line. Oh, brother.
That is your week in review. Here on White Sox Weekly, we bring it to you every single White Sox Weekly. And we are just about to wrap it up. All right, one more thing that I want to tell you here, and I think we've mentioned it a couple of times on the broadcast, but I'll say it again just in case you missed it. On Monday, August 22nd, the White Sox are hosting their Field of Greens Celebrity Golf Tournament with the help of their friends, our friends at Miller Lite. It's going to be a great day on the golf course. Current and former White Sox team members are going to be out there and golfing from varying degrees of very, very good. There are a couple of really good golfers on this team and associated with this team, and all the way down to the very, very bad me. And we're going to be golfing out there to support pediatric cancer research and treatment programs at local Chicago hospitals. You can get involved by calling 312-674-5391 or go to ChicagoWhiteSoxCharities.com and click over to the golf tournament. You can get yourself signed up there, too. There are still opportunities for you to get out there. It's 10:15 in the morning on Monday, August 22nd. It's going to be a great time and for an even better cause. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. The pregame show starts in 10 minutes. White Sox and A's Chris Sale and Ross Detweiler on the hill. Thank you very much to Jacob Turner and Justin Morneau and Robin Ventura and Miguel Gonzalez for being part of White Sox Weekly today. We will be back with the pregame show coming up next on WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly and listen to White Sox baseball right here. WLS AM 890.